is for your mother to come home and find a note saying... Jessie's eyes flashed open as she spoke these words to the empty room, and the first thing they saw was the empty glass, Gerald's water glass, still standing on the shelf. Standing there near the cuff binding her wrist to the bedpost. Not the left wrist, but the right. A note saying I've taken you to the emergency room so they can try to sew a couple of your fingers back on. Now Jessie understood the purpose of that old, hurtful memory. Understood what Punkin had been trying to tell her all along. The answer had nothing to do with the old Adam, or with the faint mineral smell of the wet spot on her old cotton underpants. It had everything to do with half a dozen panes of glass, carefully cut from the crumbling putty of an old shed window. She had lost the jar of Nivea cream, but there was still at least one other source of lubrication left to her, wasn't there? One other way to ooze on over to the promised land. There was blood. Until it clotted, blood was almost as slippery as oil. It's going to hurt like hell, Jessie. Yes, of course it would hurt like hell. But she thought she had heard or read somewhere that there were fewer nerves in the wrists than at many of the body's vital checkpoints. That was why slitting one's wrists, especially in a tub full of hot water, had been a preferred method of suicide ever since the original toga parties in Imperial Rome. Besides, she was half-numb already. I was half-numb to let him lock me up in these things in the first place, she croaked. If you cut too deep, you'll bleed to death just like those old Romans. Yes, of course she would. But if she didn't cut at all, she'd lie here until she died of seizures or dehydration, or until her friend with a bag of bones showed up tonight. Okay, she said. Her heart was pumping very hard, and she was fully awake for the first time in hours. Time restarted with a ram and a jerk, like a freight train pulling out of a siding and back onto the main line. Okay, that's the convincer. Listen, a voice said urgently, and Jessie realized with amazement that it was the voice of Ruth and the goodwife. They had merged, at least for the time being. Listen carefully, Jess. I'm listening, she told the empty room. She was also looking. It was the glass she was looking at. One of a set of 12 she'd gotten on sale at Sears 3 or 4 years ago. 6 or 8 of them broken by now. Soon there would be another. She swallowed and grimaced. It was like trying to swallow around a flannel-covered stone lodged in her throat. I'm listening very carefully. Believe me. Good. Because once you start this, you won't be able to stop again. Everything's got to happen fast, because your system is already dehydrated. But remember this. Even if things go all wrong, they'll work out just fine. She finished. And it was true, wasn't it? The situation had taken on a simplicity that was, in its own ghastly way, sort of elegant. She didn't want to bleed to death. Of course, who would? But it would be better than the intensifying cramps and the thirst. Better than him. It. The hallucination. Whatever it was. She licked her dry lips with her dry tongue and caught at her flying, confused thoughts, tried to put them in order, as she had done before going after the sample jar of face cream, which was now lying uselessly on the floor beside the bed. It was getting harder to think, she discovered. She kept hearing snatches of, "Go crazy," that talking blues, kept smelling her father's cologne, kept feeling that hard thing against her bottom. And then there was Gerald. Gerald seemed to be talking to her from his place on the floor. It's going to be back, Jessie. Nothing you can do will stop it. It will teach you a lesson. Be proud, beauty. She flicked her eyes toward him, then looked hastily back at the water glass. Gerald appeared to be grinning ferociously at her, with a part of his face which the dog had left intact. She made another effort to set her wits to work, and after some effort the thoughts began to roll. She took 10 minutes, going over the steps again and again. There wasn't much in truth to go over. Her agenda was suicidally risky, but not complicated. She mentally rehearsed each move several times just the same, looking for the minor mistake which might cost her her last chance at life. She couldn't find it. In the end, there was only one major drawback. It would have to be done very fast, before the blood could start to coagulate. And there were only two possible outcomes, a quick escape or unconsciousness and death. She reviewed the whole thing one more time, not putting off the necessary nasty business, but examining it the way she would have examined a scarf she had knitted for runs and dropped stitches, while the sun continued its steady westward run. On the back stoop, the dog got up, leaving the glistening knot of gristle upon which it had been gnawing. It ambled toward the woods. It had caught a whiff of that black scent again. And with its belly full, even a whiff was too much.